Welcome to the Tom Nelson Podcast. I have Valentina Zarkova here. And Valentina, could you tell us a little bit about yourself to get us started?
Yes, I'm emeritus professor at the University of Northumbria, Newcastle, and the director of the research company ZVS Research Enterprise. So I've been doing research in solar and plasma physics and came up mostly in energetic particles coming from the sun to the earth and heating. But at some stage, I started doing this general solar activity related to sunspots. So these are the part which we probably will be speaking today, because despite we've done quite a few things in energetic particles, discovering sunquakes, people who were born before millennium in 1998, they had big headlines in all the media. We discovered sunquakes on the sun. Paper was published in Nature, and these have our work become known, and solar terrestrial physics came to the media. After that, there were many different discoveries, not by us, but some others. But nonetheless, this is the part we started. And in 2002, we got European project funding for European Grid of Solar Observation, started investigating sunspots. So the sunspots are the dark spots on the solar surface, look like that. So the sun is an orange circle in which you have these dark spots, which you close up. If you look at the bottom, they look like this, with the umbra in center and penumbra around. And what has happened during this solar, the sunspot occur over the 11-year solar cycle, somewhere starting in the 30-40 degrees plus minus south and north, and then slowly migrate towards the equator. So these are the sunspots which were selected to define the solar activity. So many of you seen these nice pictures of current solar activity index, which called average daily sunspot number or sunspot areas. And the bottom, it shows you the average sunspot numbers from 1870, but we have now the data from 1700. And on the top, they show you butterfly diagrams of the places where the sunspots start occurring at the beginning of the cycle. Each vertical line, this is beginning of the cycle, the sunspot appear on the surface, and over the cycle 11 years between here and here, they slowly migrate toward the equator. And this latitudinal distribution called the butterfly diagrams. So this is the activity which was defined in 18th, 19th centuries by Wolf and other people, and this is what we were using for now as well. What appeared at the beginning of 20th century, that these dark spots, actually, not simply dark spots, they are places where magnetic loops are embedded into the photosphere or the surface of the sun. So basically, this is what you see as a sunspot. But in reality, these are the roots of two foot points of the loop, magnetic loop, with different polarity. So this became possible when Babcock invented magnetograph, and they started measuring magnetic field of the sun and discovered this beautiful thing. So after that, it was beginning of somewhere, maybe beginning of 20th century, 30s, 40s. And then people try to understand why this sunspots suddenly migrating toward the equator. And the magnetic field in sunspots was 1,000 times higher than surrounding area. And they always come in pairs, which explains why, because they are part of this loop. So all sunspots in the same hemisphere have the same magnetic configuration. So leading sunspot have leading polarity and the trailing has trailing polarity. So this has came up. So the sunspot cycle turned out to be about 11 years. And with the space observation of sunspot cycle, we can observe that during this part, not only on the photosphere with the sunspot, but also in the corona, the emission, these loops become very activated. So this is on the top minimum, 1996 minimum of solar cycles, we don't have many much activity. But when you come to 1999, 2000, at the bottom of this picture, you see that the image of the sun in soft X-ray shows a lot of active magnetic loops, which are burning and sending emission to the Earth and other planets. So this is the action of solar activity through sunspots and magnetic loops, which show the food point as sunspots. What happened in 1955, Eugene Parker came up with the idea of solar dynamo, which actually handles this occurrence of sunspots. So basically what he was produced the theory why the magnetic field is changing. So at the start of the cycle, like north is the northern hemisphere polarity and magnetic field southern in the southern hemisphere polarity. So this magnetic field produces a lot of at the bottom of the solar convective zone somewhere in the solar interior, produces a lot of those magnetic loops which travel from the solar minimum towards the solar maximum. So this middle plot shows you solar maximum when these loops eventually appear on the surface. And what they do, they basically appear and show the migration of the magnetic polarity southern to the north and northern to the south. So this, because the sun rotates about its axis and its rotation is not smooth, it's faster rotation on the equator and slower on near the poles. So all these loops, all these magnetic fields started twisted and they appear on the surface and create a lot of active region on the top and allowing migrate the field southern polarity to the north and northern to the south. And when they arrive to the next solar cycle, all this loop disappear from the surface. You see there were loops in the solar active stage when the solar was in maximum solar activity. And when you come to the next minimum, all this loop disappear. You don't have sunspots. This is the minimum activity. But what happened that polarity from southern on the south moved to the north. Now the northern pole has southern polarity and southern pole has north polarity. And in the next cycle, solar dynamo repeats the process again. So this is how been developed and this been many times improved. The solar dynamo theory is flourishing and developing very dramatically with this investigation. And we started dealing with this when we did automated feature extraction on this solar image. So what you get all image of the sun. And previously, all these butterfly diagrams or average sunspot numbers per month were calculated from the drawing. When we came to the digital era, we decided that possibly it's easier to probably detect these sunspots automatically and introduce automated sunspot index. So this is what we done. My group did automated feature extraction. So we extracted these big ones, active region, these red ones, filaments, And these tiny ones, these are the sunspots in the active region, which we now know these are food points of the active region loops. So we managed to do this, and this is the close-up, how they look like. So this is active region, these are sunspots. We produce 100,000 of features and try to introduce automated solar feature cutter, detection of solar activity index. So this is what we done at that time. But the problem was that we couldn't do it so much automated because there were many specific options which depends on the observer. It depends on the class. And this is why it was not possible to reproduce the solar activity index with automated detection, despite we have all possible materials you can extract from digital image. So we look at that, we thought probably the sunspots do not give you enough information because they cover only small area on the sun. So the error bars in their detection is very huge. So we decided to compare the sunspot magnetic field at the bottom with the background magnetic field of the sun. And we found that actually they're strongly dependent. So where the sunspot polarity is, for example, negative, like in the bottom here, the background magnetic field polarity should be positive. So basically the background magnetic field seems like modulates where the sunspot could appear on the surface and how they migrate toward the pole. This is what we discovered in this paper 2008. And after that, we decided to use these full disk magnetograms for introducing a new solar activity index. So what basically we did, instead of automating detection of sunspot index, which we found very difficult to automate because it depends on the agreement between people, it much easier it was to deal with the magnetic field of the whole sun. So, but we see that the activity on the sun has a wavy process, has 11 years minimum period of different activity, 11-year cycle. How do we detect the waves? So we look back at the very famous glass prism. Remember this white light coming on the left-hand side? And diffraction of the prism of the light of different wavelengths immediately produces on the right-hand side rainbow with the spectrum from red to indigo. And the device which produces the spectrum is this diffraction in the glass prism. So we thought what we can use as a prism for magnetic field, what can help us to define the way. So we discovered that magnetic field can be similarly separated into separate components with the principal component analysis. So this is what we used. And when we applied to the full disk magnetogram principal component analysis, we discovered this precise method. This is not the method which uses any artificial intelligence. Everyone who deals with waves, they know that eigenvectors, eigenvalues, always assigned to any wave. So second order differential equation produces always couple of eigenvalues and eigenvectors. So this is the same we done, but in our case, we had a number, not only two, but much larger number of these eigenvectors or vectors of own oscillations of the sun. What is unpredicted, what we found that all these vectors come in pairs. So you see the first two become here, one is 39. We divided this eigenvalue by a variance of the data assigned to this particular vector. So for these two vectors, we can assign the variance about 39%. So 39%, about 40% of variance, it gives you 67% of data by standard deviation. So this is pretty large, big piece of data defined by these eigenvectors. And then the next eigenvectors, we recently investigated them in paper in 2022. These are another pair of the vectors, you see? They again come in pairs, and in pairs, at least you have eight eigenvectors or four pairs which are linked. And we discovered that these eigenvectors are assigned to dipole magnetic source, the largest one. We call them principal components. And then you have quadruple magnetic sources, waves produced by quadruple, sextuple, and octuple magnetic sources. And they cover 95% of all magnetic data. So you see, the principle worked. Principal component allowed us to find some component of magnetic field. So how we look at them? So on the left-hand side, we produce this component. This is one component. This is another one. What we found, that each component starts in opposite hemisphere, but then they together travel in the northern hemisphere in the odd cycles, in the southern hemisphere in the even cycles. And when they meet, or the amplitudes become close, the maximum of solar activity occurs. So this is the two principal components which we derived from the cycle 21, 22, 23 from magnetic field. And then what we did, we managed to quantify these components. So there were two ways. You can use artificial intelligence, whatever, neural networks or others, and assign these some in memory, producing the prediction of this, how these components will develop. What we managed, we used the so-called Eureka prediction with Hamiltonian approach, which we managed to quantify analytically these two curves. And then we predicted them. So this is the solid line, our analytical prediction, and dashed line. This is a real measurement, because by the time we predicted, worth about 6 or 5, 7 years came, so we could use this data to compare. And we found that prediction and the real behavior are very close. This is why we calculated this curve to the cycle 26. And this is what we see. So what you can now see clearly when you look at prediction. So this cycle 24, which left behind, we at the moment in cycle 25 and somewhere approaching the maximum solar activity. And what you can see here, that in this cycle 25, the components of these two eigenvectors come in a little bit delayed in phase. And in cycle 26, the amplitudes of components are in nearly in antiphase. What it means? This means very known effect, beating effect in the waves, which each of you who have piano and invited engineer to fit your piano engineer hit the fork and hit the button on the piano and hear the sound. If the sound, the frequency is the same, he hears the same sound. If the frequency is slightly different, what will happen? That the wave basically will have beat effect. So you'll have a little bit envelope variation of amplitude. It means that he needs to fix the amplitude of one of the, in the piano, to fit the frequency to the one to the fork. On the sound, we don't have engineer, so we have to have this variation of amplitude and reduction of amplitude during grants over minimum. And you see in the cycle 26, when you calculate the resulting curve from the previous one, so if you add these components all together and calculate the summary curve, so you calculate what you see. This is cycle 21, amplitude pretty high. Cycle 22, amplitude is reducing. 23 reduced. 24, 25 slightly reduced. And then in cycle 26, amplitude will be very low. This is what I call the beating effect, because the frequency of these two waves are close to 11 years, but slightly different. And difference gives you this beating effect, which caused by the at cosine A plus cosine B. If you look at the trigonometric formula, how you do cosine A plus cosine B, you will see that beating effect comes from this envelope frequency A minus B divided by 2. This is will be. So anyway, this is first time. It was 2015 paper in Scientific Research when we discovered that amplitude of solar activity is reducing towards cycle 26. And not dramatically in cycle 25, but it will be much stronger cycle 26. So we wanted to see how this amplitude will behave on the larger scale, let's say 1,000 or 2,000 years, and what this amplitude means, what this curve, what does it mean? So in order to compare with the sunspots, what we did, we reflected, so our negative magnetic field was the southern polarity, positive northern polarity. So we say that everything will be positive. And like mirror reflect this to the top. If we reflect everything to the top with the modulus of this curve, we obtain this. We obtain this is red, our average sunspot numbers. And the black ones are, this is my summary curve, but modulus summary curve reflected to the positive. So you see, it more or less describes the solar activity. This is what gave us clue. This magnetic field summary curve actually is related to the solar activity index somehow. We do not say this exactly the same one, because this is a different field. It is poloidal field of the background sun, while the magnetic field in sunspot, it is toroidal field of magnetic loops. But nonetheless, they should be related. And what now we can build modulus summary curve for all the cycles, which I presented before, cycle 21, 22, 23, 24 and 25, you see there's not much difference between amplitude cycle 24, 25, but it will be much difference in cycle 26 when amplitude drops down. And some people already also reported that the amplitude of solar activity will be reducing in cycle 25, 26. So we done published paper recently. Our prediction, this is the cycle 24, which at that time we didn't have, but now we had it. We use it, and the prediction is correspondent to the what is measured, so which is nice, confirmed. So what basically now, we could calculate this summary curve for 2,000 years from 1,200 to 3,200. And you see beauty of it, yeah? You see that this is the envelope frequency, remember that one beating effect. So if you have two waves, one wave has cosine A and another wave is cosine B, when you add these two waves and A not equal to B, the envelope amplitude frequency will be A minus B by 2, and this is the envelope amplitude which create grand solar cycle, while the frequency of this 11-year cycle will be A plus B divided by 2. If difference is not big, it will be still 11-year cycle. So this is what we discovered. This is the part which we used for our detection. This is, we discovered that we, on the approach of grand solar minimum, modern grand solar minimum, and there were previous grand solar minimum, Maunder grand solar minimum, Dalton minimum, Wolf minimum, and some others. So this is, was done in 2015. And suddenly we realized that we are in the verge of coming to mini ice age, which obviously was a huge objection from people who were promoting anthropogenic global warming, because it is very inconvenient what they're saying, the temperature is increasing. What we are saying, the temperature actually, from after we pass the maximum of cycle 25, the temperature will be decreasing because solar activity will stop very dramatically. The sun will stop firing these active regions and these loops and flares and stop sending radiation to the Earth and other planets. Do you wish to ask anything?
Well, I'm just curious if you can quantify it at all as to how much cooling we might see between now and this predicted minimum, and when would that happen, that minimum?
It started already. I actually, these are results where we reported our results at the press release of National Astronomy Meeting 2015 in media, YouTube. So if you type mini ice age and my name, you will find all this relationship. And in my webpage, in the solar news somewhere, at the very bottom, there are this data from 7 years old. So what, you know, this, we try to do verification. We look at the minima in the past and our curve. So our curve is blue. And what we found that actually with this formula, we hit Maunder minimum, Wolf minimum, Oort minimum, even Homeric minimum during the Roman Empire. So basically, it more or less reproduces well, given that we had not much data, but because it is a precise method of eigenvectors, so it is not artificial intelligence, not dependent on our wish or something. It's precise method. So we got from the data, we got this pretty precise formula. How much it is will be reduced? So if you remember, I will show you. So these are the periods which we managed to hit. The only difference we couldn't get, the spur minimum, which is over here. They put spur minimum, which we found that the spur minimum actually was not the minimum of solar activity. It was the maximum solar activity, because at the when you had the spur minimum, the temperature on Earth was very high. But what happened at that time during spur minimum, it was the explosion of huge supernova, Vela Junior, which was in the southern hemisphere, somewhere 55 degrees of the southern ecliptical latitude. And this is why most of those observers on the north haven't seen it. What it changed? It changed the background of the radiation of cosmic rays coming to Earth. And this is why people who calculate here the minima maxima from radioisotopes in the trees or something, they use as a background for calculate the age. But Libby, the guy who invented how to calculate the age, he warned that changing the background is very important, or knowing background is very important. So if at that time it was explosion of supernova, which was only 600 light years close to the Earth, so the huge increase of the gamma ray emission coming from the supernova increased background cosmic rays in the Earth, which basically, if you look at that, led to the huge explosion and auroras on the Earth at that time. Aurora was seen in the 14th, 15th century at the level of Mediterranean. So the auroras were so strong, they're seen at the level of Mediterranean, which means that at that time, background and the radiation, gamma ray radiation coming from the supernova, this is why it's recorded as a like minimum, because background was affecting the date, but probably this minimum would probably refer because of the time error produced by their own background. So this minimum referred either to this one or to the previous one. So this is the only one which did not come up. But now we speak about the temperature. Skip the modeling of this probably nice effect explaining your beating effect. So this is how you calculate sum of two cosine. It will be sine of difference frequencies multiplied by sine of sum of the frequency. And this is the sine which produces this envelope frequency. This is from a lecture note for the students of the first year about waves. So anyway, this is the thing which we could manage to produce with the modeling of solar dynamo. On the top is the model waves, and at the bottom is what we derived from the observation. So you should understand that everything we derive as principal component is not a model. You derive straight from the observation. And only after that, we produce the model which managed to explain these observations. And what I would say, jump to the temperatures if you want to see. So this is how the temperature is changing. During mounted minimum, the temperature reduced, average temperature reduced by 1 degree, which is probably the amount which we would expect for cycle 26. So the temperature will be reduced. It will not be that wide because the modern ground minimum is 3 solar cycles. The temperature already began decreasing, but it will decrease probably by 1 degree. It was decreasing during all minima or Dalton minima as well, but this is the amount you would expect. So reduction of solar irradiance by about 3 watt per square meters would lead to the decrease of about 1 degree. So how it happened, the decrease, there's Schindel et al. 2001 in Science that published. So the surface temperature at Earth was reduced during Mount the Minima, and Europe, North America went into a deep freeze. So they restored the temperature and found this. This is published in their paper 2001. I don't know why many scientists now forgotten, but this is good research done 20 years ago, and this is absolutely correct. At that time, when we had Mount the Minima, alpine glaciers extended over valley farmland. You see sea ice crab thaws from Arctic, Dunap and Thames rivers and canals frozen. So basically, how does it happen? What happened during this Grand Solar Minima? The changing of the jet stream. So without Grand Solar Minima, without magnetic field change, our jet stream is straight. Here is the whole stream. Here this equator, beautiful. But then when you have a reduction of magnetic field, then less ozone will be affected planetary atmosphere waves, and then they will produce giant wiggles in here. And these jet streams affect the normal standard jets and will be kicked North Atlantic Oscillation. And this is how the temperature is reduced. So reduction of magnetic field on the sun is the consequence for the Earth and other planets. It's like this. It was investigated by NASA scientists, which now they pretend they've forgotten, but it doesn't go anywhere. So what is happening with the current cycle? This is taken a few days ago from Belgian Royal Belgian Observatory, which show you the green line shows a steep growth of number spotless days in cycle 25, current cycle, compared with any other cycles since we started observing sunspots. And what you can see, the cycle 25 shows a very sharp increase of number spotless days. So it doesn't matter, it is at the moment at the maximum. We need to survive 2-3 years. When the cycle passes through maximum and start going to the descending phase, where the whole mini ice age will start acting very dramatically. But you see indication that this cycle is promising to be pretty much very strong one, spotless, which means absent of spots, it's absent of these active loops. Remember? Loops which are embedded into the surface, their spots. So if there are no spots, there are no loops embedded. And these loops interacting, they produce flares, they produce energetic particles, which are sent to the Earth and other atmospheres and heat them and produce heating for us. If they are not present, there's no heating. So this is what happened. And this what coming up very soon. And the temperatures, for example, even measurement of the temperature here, the temperature is reducing in June 2022, reduced dramatically, slightly increased in June, but not much. So the temperature started decreasing. It is difficult, even if we had a couple of hot days. I explained why we have the hot days, because it's too another process, but for time being, in the next 30 years, the global warming probably will be last thing in our mind, because it will be mini ice age, which will require a lot of heating because it will be cold. And let me show here. It was recorded in July 19, in Ukraine, in Carpathian Mountain, they had snow. They also had snow this August. August, snow in mountains which are not very high. So 2021, very much snow. In January 2020, it was snow and frost minus 2, recorded in Amman Kingdom, Arabia, first time in 150 years. And this is will be coming much more frequently. Early snow in Canada, September 20, May 21. So we will see this is coming towards us, and this is will produce decrease of the temperature. So what we now actually enjoying that sun is the maximum of cycle 25. So 2-3 years, while these loops are still on the sun and heating, we have the heating. But as soon as the sun switches off these loops, you will see what happened. What happened, what exactly happened during Mount the Minimum. Okay. Are you satisfied?
I am. This is super interesting. Yeah.
Is it?
Stuff. Very interesting.
So here are the examples, storms, winter storms in Colombia. And now NASA appear agree that full-blown Grand Solar Minimum in the late 2020s will be here, indeed. So soon we pass maximum of cycle 25, 2024, 2025. Then we will be actually heading with the full throttle towards the Grand Solar Minimum. So this will be happening. And they also declared that cycle 25 will be weakest in the past 200 years, so on. So again, comparison, remember Al Gore, given that the Arctic ice will disappear by 2020. Well, this is Arctic ice 2012 and 2013 increased area much more and now increasing very dramatically. And you know that in the Russian part of Arctic, many ships are frozen into the ice because they believe that it will be global warming and send the ships, and it was actually very cold there. So now some ships are frozen into the ice and need some specific ice breaking devices to free their ships. So this is the thing which is happening. Of course, it is related to the interaction between what comes from the sun through the heating and exchange of this heat with the ocean. So ocean and water is the main delivery guys which absorb the heating and then produce back into the atmosphere. And this is where the guys modeling the terrestrial atmosphere say temperature. They say this is where global warming come up. We come to back to this one a bit later. But what I would say that all this El Nino events, they will show obviously the number of female type events which called cooling will be more frequently after 2025, 2028. So it will be cooling coming to the atmosphere. So I will stop this one. This is the part we investigated, that volcanoes also will produce a little bit more. Okay, I will show you probably this one. That not only jets which are formed, as I shown, it was discovered by Schindler et al. 2008, that the jet system is affected by coming to ground solar minimum, but also volcanic eruptions. So in here, with the blue one, these are the volcanic frequencies. And the red one, this is my summary curve, which I just shown you, we calculated for the years shown here. And we normalize that minima and maxima coincide. So volcanic maxima coincide with the maxima of magnetic field with southern polarity. And what we found that correlation between this curve with the southern polarity maximum, actually 84%. So basically, when magnetic polarity of sun solar magnetic field become southern, we will have a lot of volcanic eruption. Why it is relevant? Because it will happen in cycle 26. So apart from those jets, we will have much more volcanic eruptions and ashes, which probably will contribute to the further cooling of our atmosphere. So this is the thing which is upon us. And this is why the people need a lot of energy resources. We need to resolve the problem and probably stop blaming fossil fuel and embrace it, because we need as much heating as you need, because it will be snowing. It might be snowing in June. It might be some years when we will not have summer at all. So this is why we need to have fuel and come prepared to the grand solar minimum, which is upon us, which will occur 2020, 2053, and this is very unique event. None of the generation observe it, so we are in very unique position. We have so many instruments, we can record step by step how it's happening. And whoever criticizes our prediction, I say we are in the middle of it, so we record it. Within 10 years, we will know who is right. If I'm wrong, you can blame, all right, you were like Cassandra predicting the bad while it didn't happen. Or if I'm right, we need to predict and protect many families from not only from cold. Okay, you can heat your houses inside, but you need to produce food for those people, for animals. And if it is, will be snowing in the northern hemisphere in Europe and Africa, then you need to produce this food somewhere else. You need in Europe, in America, you cannot produce it, then you need to produce it in Africa and some other countries, and African countries. So this is what become an essential issue, and not exactly agenda which is fully propagated, global warming, we need to produce cooling. Global warming will come, this is another issue, but for the next 30 years, we need a lot of energy, we need to produce food. This is the thing.
So I do have a question. There was what they called a year without a summer, right, in the 1800s. And was that caused by a solar activity, and then that changed volcanic activity?
It was the year without summer, as far as I know. It was eruption of large volcano, which produced a lot of ashes. And basically, the ashes covered us from the solar radiation, which, again, another evidence. As soon as you cover yourself up with the sun, if energy coming from the sun stop coming to the earth, nothing from inside the earth can heat the atmosphere. So we are super confident assuming that we are heating atmosphere from inside. They claim that if you switch off the sun, we keep running because we heat ourselves from inside. It is nonsense. And this nonsense came from this particular picture. Have you seen it before?
I have, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this is what they said. It was in early times. Hold a sec. So this is the solar activity here, solar cycles and solar irradiance. And this is the temperature variation. And so far, until probably 80s, 90s, the temperature follow the variation of solar irradiance coming from solar activity. And then only here they started moving the solar activity from cycle 21, started reducing, while the temperature still increasing, and it is real increase. Of course, this increase, this is what some people from this modeling, they wanted to find some mechanism which can heat. And the only thing they came up with this CO2 emission that can heat planet from inside, assuming that sun has nothing to do with us and we heat from inside. If volcanic ashes cold us winter in the summer, it means that if we don't have radiation, we cannot heat ourselves. We cannot do this. This is the thing. And but at that time, they didn't have any ideas what could heat. And this is why they came up. And you had an interview, I think it was Patrick Moore, who say that CO2 cannot be bad gas heating, because this is the gas which is used to increase the greeneries. They use CO2 in garden centers, yes, to improve greeneries for people to buy very nice and bright greens. So increase of CO2 is not so bad for the earth, and it cannot heat the earth. The CO2 increase is a consequence of heating and not the reason for it. Well, I want to show. We found the reason, but before show, I want to give you a sec. I'll come back to that one. No, I cannot do this. The radiation in CO2 is infrared, which it means that wavelength is so low, it's so big, it's the 10,000 meters or something, I don't remember exactly. A frequency is so low that the energy produced by this radiation is negligible. So the main energy comes from the UV emission of the sun. Yeah, you understand that?
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. UV emission, it is H nu. Nu is high, so the wavelength is 1 angstrom or even 1/10 angstrom for gamma rays, which means that frequency is huge. And this is the emission which comes from the sun, UV emission, and hitting the Earth. So why, if the solar activity is decreasing, where this emission come from? So they assume UV emission stop. The only UV emission come from the solar activity. But what we did, we published paper in 2019. So based on them, we didn't know this problem they had with it. By that time, I didn't look at how exactly they come up with the heating, with global warming. But we done further investigation of our magnetic field. So we look, you know, remember we have a formula. So we calculated this formula from 2000 to 10,000 before Christ. And when you build this, you see that, I put these vertical lines, you see that the patterns formed by grand solar cycles are very similar. Approximately 5 grand solar cycles have similar patterns. Do you see this? Yeah.
Yep.
More or less. Mm-hmm. So some cycles are narrow, like this one. Some are extended and long, and they extended and long in each of those. So what we discovered, well, it's like very similarities. So what we did, we decided, okay, let's come back to our 22-year cycle. So we calculate average of 22 years. So where is the zero line? So if the cycle knew any shifts, everything which is increased and decreased for the positive polarity should be the same what increased and decreased for the negative polarity. So if you add them together, your zero line should be at the line zero, right? Are you with me?
I'm with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we added this, and what we did, we calculated the baseline. And we discovered that the baseline, the zero line, actually it is not zero line. It oscillates by the factor 20, by the amplitude 20 times lower than solar cycles, but it still oscillates, and oscillations are very precise. So they're not changing much. The period about 2000, 2100 years. And the same period lasts for, we calculated 120,000 years, and the same period lasts for forever. So this would, zero line oscillates. So basically it waves. Why zero line would wave? Would, do you have any guesses why it would wave?
I don't, no.
We measure magnetic field from the Earth. So this zero line would wave if we, with the Earth moving towards the sun or from it. This is what the oscillation of the zero line indicates. There is some, I would say, planetary motion or solar motion or whatever. So some orbital motion which produces, because the period is very strict. So it cannot be done on the sun itself. When on the sun, remember when we done on the sun, the curve is not so nice, cosine-like. Remember, it is much more disturbed. So it doesn't look like cosine. This one looks very, very precise cosine function. So when we look how the solar irradiance changes in the past 10,000 years, they also show these oscillations with the 2,100 year period. This is what we found. And then we read that it is so-called Hallstatt cycle of 2,200 years, which they discovered in the oscillation of solar irradiance in the biomass of the trees and radioisotopes in the Earth. So 2,000-year cycles. And we found this is because the oscillation of the zero line, so something changes the distance between sun and earth. So after that, we thought, okay, where we are now, in this cycle. So when you put, so this is the cycle more than one. This is this big oscillation of the baseline. And it turned out we are here. So it turned out that the minimum of the current cycle was during Mount the Minimum. And now the magnetic field keep increasing towards the southern, towards the northern polarity. So this is the thing, like here, and this is the inclination of this curve. So when we impose the solar irradiance, basically the solar irradiance and variation of the zero line go together. So they coincide with the same slope and the same timing. So basically what we thought, this should be that the sun and earth come somehow closer. The earth obtains a little bit more radiation from the sun and magnetic field become higher because earth become closer to the sun. So this definitely could cause increase of the temperature because the sun become closer. But how does it happen? We, in this paper, we only suggested in one paragraph that the sun become closer to the earth, and this is why we have increase of the radiation and possibly temperature. The wave response from the people from anthropogenic global warming was overwhelming. They eaten alive our paper. They produced a lot of reviews beneath the paper. The editor produced a review after the publication. So eventually, the anthropogenic global warming people, they retracted this paper saying that the sun cannot move close to the earth. This is incorrect. Only on this basis that the sun cannot move towards the earth, this is not correct. And this is, so they retracted the paper. And at that time, it was 4th of March 2020. And we, in 20 days, we went into the COVID lockdown. So I had plenty of time. So I did download the ephemeris of the distances between sun and earth. So I look backward. I have education in astronomy, so I'm not afraid of calculating and understanding motion. So this is our planetary system. Sun is here. So but basically, I look at the different Milankovitch cycles. None of them can be helpful because the periods from 15,000 to 41,000 years, and our period is only 2,000 years. So none of them are suitable. So what I look was suitable turned out to be solar inertial motion. So the motion that not only sun attracts the planet, so they rotates around the sun following the Kepler law. But when Kepler invented the law, Newton still did not discover gravitation. It was only a few decades later he discovered. So no one included the background effect, how the planets affect the sun. In this case, what happens that the sun, basically, the old planets of the solar system, they basically do not rotate around the sun. They rotate about the center of Earth-Sun system, which is called barycenter. And this sun also rotates around the same barycenter, but on much smaller orbit. And this is called solar inertial motion. So here is example of solar inertial motion. So this is solar orbit simulator. This is not invented by me. It's done by people doing celestial mechanics. This is, you can find on the internet, which shows how the sun moves around this barycenter. And the distance in which it moves is about 2 radii of the sun. So diameter is about 4 solar radii. So pretty large distance. And this is the distance is called solar inertial motion. So all the planets rotate about the barycenter and the sun rotates about the barycenter. What is happening, like in here, your sun should be sitting in the center or in the focus, because it is ellipse, it's sitting in the focus, in one of the focuses of the Earth orbit, elliptical orbit. But when you include the solar inertial motion, and we use paper from Kuznetsov, who calculated this solar inertial motion, so your sun has to be moving like this. So it's not sitting in this dot, but it moves up to here, which shows you that in some period, sun will be closer to the Earth in some period. And at this stage in 2020 and the next 400-500 years, the sun will is closer to the Earth during the days of spring equinox in March and this time. So this is why the sun, so if we have spring equinox up here, so the sun closer to the Earth from February until June, and much further from the Earth in other months. So it means during this time, the Earth gets much more heating than it would have if the sun was sitting in the focus of the elliptical orbit. Are you with me?
I am.
Yeah? Okay.
Yep.
Let's move on. So what objection I got from anthropogenic global warming people, they said, oh, no, the Earth moves together with the sun. They can't deny that the sun has inertial motion because it's been calculated. And the fact that the star has inertial motion is the basis how the people look for exoplanets. As soon as they see this, wobbling star with wobbling radiance, they know they should have planetary system. So this is well-known effect in astrophysics, but only in solar terrestrial physics, they decided to ignore. So this is was by the guy, Professor Ken Rice, who said, no, if this is the motion of the sun with the yellow, the motion of the Earth is exactly following the sun in this inertial motion. This is what he said to me. And the comments beneath retracted paper, these are the numbers. So when we went on lockdown, I started investigating distances, all celestial motion. So these are formula. And I found that it could not change the orbit. So if Earth would be moving like Ken Rice says, still the changes of irradiance which come from the sun will not be covering what we observe. So what I did, I went on the website to Paris Madden Observatory, which produced the ephemeris of Sun-Earth distances, and compared them with the similar ephemeris produced by NASA. They are accurate within 7 digits after comma. So then I produced these distances in here for previous millennium from 600 for 1600 and from 1600 for 2600. So these are the distances, daily distances every month. What you see, the distance between sun and Earth is decreasing January, February, March in both millennia, and much more decreasing in the current millennium. So if in the previous millennium it decreases maximum about 0.006 astronomical unit, for this millennium the decrease of the distance between 1600 blue one and 2600 will be about 0.011 thousands of astronomical units, which is a pretty large change. So this is why the distance is decreasing. So like in that picture, because the sun moves closer, so this is, you see the May and June. This is the, when the distance is maximally decreasing. If the distance between sun and earth decreasing, it means that we get more radiation because our boiler come closer to the earth in March to June, right? You see that?
I do. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Furthermore, what is beautiful, it turned out that, remember we have a summer solstice, which should be 21st of June, or winter solstice, 21st of December. So what you can see that in previous millennium, it approached and passed. So it was probably in 1100, it was 21st of June. But then it started moving towards the end of June. And for current millennium, actually, the summer solstice, look at that. We had this year, we had summer solstice actually come on the 5th of July. 5th of July. So the shortest distance was actually in the 5th of July, not 21st of June. So this is why we have extra more radiation, because the more sun comes, it is closer to us in July. So we have this extra between 21st of June and 5th of July, we have extra radiation coming to us, which should not come. But because the sun is closer, it's coming to us. This is why we have extra heating. Do you see it?
I do, yeah.
But so this is why we have this extra heating, which is deposited into the ocean, which consumes it and takes a while to return it. But because the sun is closer to this part of the orbit in March and June, it is further from the orbit in January and in the autumn. So if you look what happened in January in this millennium, so our winter solstice is also somewhere in the 5th, 6th, and for 2600 years, our winter solstice will be on the 16th of January. So what we will have, extra 3 weeks of heating. And this is why the temperature will be increasing until 2600 years. And then the sun will start returning back because of its inertial motion to the focus of the elliptical orbit. And this distance become increasing again. So this is what I discovered then, what I did. It is published in the chapter of the book, which I published in March 2021. So all these results are already published, so you can read them. It is a hard copy book and it published electronically. And if you go on my website for the 2021, it is a link to this book, which I show how much the distance changes. So you can see exactly the differences between. So you see the differences between 1600 and 2600 is about 0.11 or 0.6 or 0.11. 11 thousandths of astronomical unit, which is huge distance, exactly to account for the heating we obtain now. So the temperature increased by 1.5 degree. It's actually in line with the increase of heating because sun become closer between mountain minimum and now. So I calculated and the, what we show. So what, this is how the distances change. So just to recapture, if you don't have in the previous millennium 1600, we didn't have effect of the solar inertial motion. So your solar solstice in June and the curves are more or less like symmetric. It's slightly decreasing, but not much. But in the current millennium, my summer solstice changed to June, to July. So this is where we got extra heating. And obviously this is causes heating and will last until 2600. And so what I try to present here, so instead of keeping sun on this central point in the center of focus, your sun is shifted and distance, the earth does not move with the sun, obviously, because ephemeris are official, published by NASA and by Meadon Observatory, and they're exactly the same within 7 digit after comma. So whatever Mr. Rice declared is not correct. So I was correct. It was my anticipation in that paper 2019 that should happen. They corrected that, they don't know celestial mechanics, and Mr. Rice was specialist in celestial mechanics, but it turned out he's not right. NASA said you should be checking the real ephemeris. So we've proven indeed the distances are changing. And if distances are changing, we can use inverse squared law and calculate how the radiation will be changing. So the radiation coming from the sun will be intensity of emission on the sun divided by square of distance. So, and here I presented how this radiation changing, and you can clearly see that if this is 600 by 1600, the radiation coming from the sun increasing, and this is for previous millennium, 600 to 1600, and much more increasing for 1600 to 7600. So increasing very dramatically by 3.5%, 4%. This is why we have this heating. So in that book, I did estimation that the heating will come extra another 2 degrees from now until 26. It will be 2.5 degrees increase. And whatever we can do on the Earth, we can stop it, because this is the orbital motion. The sun is coming towards us, and nothing horrible will happen because the Earth had this million times. Remember this cycle? We got 120,000 years, the oscillations of the baseline. For 120,000 years, the Earth had this oscillation and managed to survive. And the last time we had heating, it was during Roman Empire, when in Scotland they grew grapes and they had the stone, sunny stone bath in Scotland because it was so hot. So probably we're heading to that particular period. And after that, 2600, the sun start moving back toward the focus of the ellipse, and the temperature become decreasing for the next 1,000 years. So this basically, again, it is in the book. If you look at the book, you can look how solar irradiance is changing. And to show you demonstration, annual variation of solar irradiance in 600 to 1,600 and 1,700 to 1,600. Again, you can see that the input of solar radiation in the early months is not compensated by output in the later months in the year. Furthermore, what I did, I calculated annual TSI variations during these two millennia. So if I take average per month radiation for each year, the increase of annual radiance will be about 1 or 2 watt per square meters, which was exactly what anthropogenic global warming people predict, because they use the average heating per month. But you can't use average heating because as I shown from graphs, the variation over the months are not distributed normally. So what we need to use the total heating coming from the sun during the whole month. So if I use the total heating, I discovered that input from the sun is not 1-2 watt per square meter. It's about 20-25 watt per square meters. And this is why we have this heating in this millennium. And after 25,000, the heating will be decreasing. So I found this extra heating which comes, and it comes from the sun and not from the internal. So maybe it comes something from internal. I did not consider it at all. But what I found that very easily heating could come from the sun, because sun moves closer to the earth during the spring equinox and this all spring and summer month. This is why we have extra heating. So there's extra solar forcing called by gravitation of planets, which is a likely reason of the main part of global warming. Okay. Hello?
Very, very, very good stuff. This might be a good stopping point, or do you have other points you'd like to make before we wrap up here?
Yes, what I wanted, when I look at that, I thought, I can't believe that none of the people guessed that CO2 cannot heat. And I found this paper by Hardy, who actually calculated that if you increase the heating from the sun only by 5 watt per square meter, immediately comes that solar warming of the past century increases by 60%. And then the rest come from internal warming, like they assume, only 40%. But remember, I found that we have heating by about 20 watt per square meter. So definitely people suspecting this, but Hardy was working at that time full time. He couldn't calculate the full 25 watt per square meter. Now he's retired and he's putting forward the correct calculations. So basically, people realizing that the heating couldn't come anywhere only from our boiler, and our main boiler is the sun. We cannot heat ourselves from inside. It would be great if we could, but unfortunately, it is not the case. And this is my my point. But I will probably try. I try to understand how they come up with this erroneous, how they can get this energy coming from CO2. So one thing, they didn't include the correct heating, but they found something from CO2 which produces this heating. And they need to do some errors. And I needed to look what errors they produce. And turn out they did not include the radiative transfer. And here this curvature wanted to show you. So this is UV emission when it's strong emission. This is your CO2. It is tiny, tiny, tiny energy. You have to have a lot of the CO2 to produce anything. What this guy did, indeed, that they have CO2, the number of atoms on the line of sight is about 400. It is optical thickness. And they added all the emission from this atom, that like it is comes back to the planet. But with radiative transfer, here what happened. So if your optical thickness less than 1, your emission is added, you do straight line. But if your optical thickness is greater than 1, it becomes saturated. So it cannot be added. This is their main error. The added emission, which basically should be self-absorbed and not seen. So I found why, how they managed to do explanation CO2. And we found that the energy comes from the sun again. So this is the thing. This is my point. Okay?
Okay. All right. Any other points you'd like to make?
Well, so I believe that it will not be dangerous with the global warming, given that we cannot do much. We just need to adopt it. The main problem will be in the next 30 years, this ground solar minimum, because when it is snowing and no food growing, it will be much more difficult to survive. So this is the thing which I want to emphasize. So this is it.
Okay. And over the next 30 years, this will become undeniable, right? As we look at the satellite data, for example.
Yes, it will become not even 30, maybe 5 years only. We need to survive this maximum of cycle 25 we are now. So cycle 25 has maximum 24, 25. So we are at the maximum of current solar cycle when we have many loops. Despite the number of sunspots is reducing, but they're still generating these loops, and they're generating flares and generating emission. As soon as we move from maximum and come into the descending phase, this is what we will be having: reduction of heat incoming from the sun, because activity on the solar surface will be reduced. And this ground solar minimum will come. So for our generation, this global warming is not essential. The main thing is this ground solar minimum, which reduce the temperature, heating, and reduction of production of food and everything. So this is the main thing.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much for taking the time to do this. I very much enjoyed listening to this, and I need to watch it through again and get it put up on the internet. But thank you very much.
You're very welcome. If you have any questions, you can look at the book chapter to verify the distances, because these are not my calculation. These are calculations by done professionals who do from the sun. And I believe the people who do anthropogenic global warming, it was their task to check the ephemeris before declaring that the distances are not changing. They do change. And I wouldn't do this job if they wouldn't retract my paper. So it's my honor of the scientists was to prove that I was right. And this is what I managed to do.
Fantastic. All right. Thank you very much. I'll talk to you later.
You're very welcome.
Goodbye.
Cheers. Bye-bye. Bye.